So with that, it is my pleasure to say that we are joined this evening by Adam Bailey with guide dog Micah and Lori Burnson with guide dog Captain. Adam graduated in class 411 in May of 2019, and Micah was raised by Beverly and Alan Adams of the Ventura Group. Lori was matched with Captain as an in-home placement, and they completed their training together in December of 2019. And Captain was raised by the Ugoritz family. I hope I'm saying that close to correct. And they are also part of the Ventura Group. So we're super excited to have both of you guys here with us this evening. Thank you for giving us of your time. And we really look forward to spending some time learning a little bit more about your stories and your journeys with your guide dog. So thank you guys both for being here.
Thank you for inviting us.
All right. Can you guys
happy to be here?
Excellent. So let's start a little bit. Maybe Adam, if you can kick things off. So my first question will be to both of you separately, but basically if you can each tell us a little bit about yourself, where are you guys from? Where did you grow up? Like if we were doing a quick and dirty Cliff Note biography, what kind of information would you share? Adam, the floor is yours.
So my name is Adam, as you guys said, and I have Micah, who's been wonderful. And I'm 32 years old. I live in a city called Lake Stevens, Washington, which is about 45 minutes north of Seattle. And I have a condition called Usher syndrome, which means I'm hard of hearing. And then I also have a progressive eye disease that means I lose vision over time. So the last 10 years, I've graduated college. I've been working in aerospace as a supply chain manager, so basically a professional shopper, if you will. Spending other people's money for a living. So that's fun.
Nice.
And that's just kind of the quick and dirty. Some hobbies I have, I enjoy working out. I'm very active. I enjoy kayaking. So Lake Stevens has a small lake, so I like to kayak out there. I used to run. Right now it's down to a treadmill, but I enjoy running, cycling, and weightlifting. Just anything to get me, off my butt. I'm a very active person. One of the big reasons for getting a guide dog was I planned to be for a very long time.
Excellent. Perfect. And Lori, can you offer us a similar sort of Cliff Note personal bio?
It's funny. Adam and I have the same hobbies. I like kayaking. I like hiking. I don't do any of that. I just wanted to see what it sounded like to say it. I'm really thrilled to quote, see a lot of you guys, and I don't know a lot of some of our new recruits, but I'm looking forward to physically meet you, hopefully not with such distance. I have been working at GDA for about 18 years, and I have had Captain is my fourth guide dog, born and raised Valley girl in the San Fernando Valley, totally. And received my first guide dog, Nigel, in 2002, and my life changed beyond anything I could imagine. And each of my dogs after Nigel have kept me on this path of change and really have just opened so many doors for me that I never thought would be open being blind. And it's truly made blindness a manageable thing, and I thank all of you for just being a part of having that happen. And my hobbies, well, not as active as Adam. I love reading. Right now, it's with everybody. It's indoor activities, which is playing with Captain, throwing toys, trying to keep up with the day-to-day news and everything like that, and just being patient like everybody else and trying to stay healthy and stay well.
Excellent. Yeah, definitely important to keep everybody healthy and well, for sure. Now, I know both of you were born sighted and began losing your vision, as adults. Can you maybe talk us through a little bit about what that was like for you, sort of what that transition look like, and what led to both of your decisions to ultimately get a guide dog? Adam, do you want to jump into that one?
Yeah, I can do that. So I'm going to be a little bit long-winded. Cut me off if I go too long here. As I said earlier, I was born with Usher syndrome, and what that is hard of hearing with progressive vision loss. And at first, we didn't realize that's what we had. My brother and I, we have the same condition. And growing up, I had hearing aids, and 30 years ago, it was like the clunky FM system that you wear around your waist with all that stuff. And so that's kind of the challenge I've been working through, as I grew up. And thankfully, hearing aids and stuff have gotten better. But I guess the point with all that is, I was a very visual person. I would lip read. I would navigate my surroundings purely visually. My hearing was something I did not rely on. And then when I was in high school, I started noticing having some night blindness issues. I would get lost in the house at night, easily turned around, stuff like that. And my eye doctor had the foresight to go, it might be this thing. We should really get you checked out. So they sent us over to UW Medical, and they did a bunch of tests and whatnot. And sure enough, the doctor came in and said, "Well, I hate to say it, but you got hit by the unlucky stick. You're going to be going blind." And I'm like, "Well, that's a bummer." But, my upbringing has always been, these are just challenges. Everyone has challenges, and you make the best of every situation. So, with that in the back of my mind, it's like, okay, well, make the best of the situation. So, went to college, and I did drive for about 10 years. I stopped driving when I was 26. Probably should have stopped sooner than that, but I stopped before anything bad happened, so that was a blessing. Mm-hmm. And around that time, I started using a cane, partly to let other people know that, hey, I'm visually impaired. I may, not see you. So, thinking of like crossing streets and navigating a store. I have a funny story, actually, and I went to a football game without my cane. This is around that time. And, I didn't want to ask my friends for help, thinking, I can figure it out. I had to go use the restroom. And, I followed someone into the restroom. Turned out it was a female restroom. And I quickly realized it, left, went to the correct one. And I came out, and I was promptly surrounded by about six security officers informing me that, they were going to kick me out of the stadium. I'm like, oh, no. How do I explain my way out of this one? And visually impaired, probably sound like a drunk person at a football game, right? So that's when I started using my cane more. And, that definitely helped. And I guess the moment where I said I need to do something more to keep my world from shrinking was I was walking with my cane. And I was at a crosswalk, and I saw the crosswalk sign turn. And the person in front of me walked into the street, and they got run over by a car.
Oh my gosh.
And I couldn't, it killed the person, unfortunately.
Oh.
And I couldn't hear the car. I couldn't see the car. With my white cane, like, wow, I wouldn't have known the car was there until I hit it. And then it would be too late. And that's when I really started thinking, I need to do something more to make sure I stay safe. I work in, aerospace. There's a manufacturing setting. You got forklifts running around, just walking around my hometown. And I guess it really came to a decision of, am I going to let the world shrink, or am I going to use the tools that I need to live my life the way I want to live? And that's when I started looking into what it would take to get a guide dog and how it would benefit and, all those things. So that's kind of my progression, if you will.
Wow.
And
yeah.
It's the best decision I ever made. I mean, he's not only is a great companion, he truly does help. Especially in those situations where something unexpected happens, it's easy to memorize a route, kind of know where you're going, but it's when those odd situations come up. And, even just about 3 months ago, I was in downtown Seattle, doing something, and, I went across the street, and Micah gave me a hard no. He's like, "Nope, not going, Dad." And, you can tell when he's concerned. And, a truck ran a red light. And like, wow, like I don't know what would have happened if I walked out. Maybe he would have missed me, maybe not, but he did his job. He said, "Nope, this isn't right. We're going to wait." Mm-hmm. And, he really does make a big difference. And I think what you puppy raisers are doing is just amazing. You guys really do make a big difference. I mean, who knows, maybe in Seattle that could have saved my life.
Yeah.
I was thankful that know if I got hit or not, but I feel very blessed to have him with me.
Wow. Good dog, Micah. Good dog.
He's
Lori,
smart.
How about for you? Tell us a little bit about your journey.
My
dog user and
process?
Your experience. Yeah.
Well, I'm older than Adam. So I was diagnosed with diabetes when I was almost 16. And I was playing tennis pretty competitively, and I really didn't pay attention to my diabetes much because it's not what you do at 16. So not to look back and say, I wonder if I did, would I have, blah, blah, blah. But as a result, down the road when I was 33, I lost vision in my right eye, which was pretty sudden. But I was able to you still are allowed and legally to drive with, you know, one good eye vision. And I was driving, and I was working at Paramount at the time in the licensing department. And my other eye, before the right eye had resigned itself to being yay or nay, my left eye started clouding up in like 15 seconds. And I knew, okay, the left eye is doing what the right eye is doing. Okay, so I had to get a ride home from work that day, obviously. And that was like the beginning of another chapter in my life where it was many, many surgeries to see, am I going to be blind? Am I going to have sight? And a roller coaster of having some and then not having any and having some and really being on the fence of which side am I on? I didn't know which way to like live. And I remember, like Adam, there's a moment that kind of sticks with you. I remember before even using a cane, I really had a hard time literally grasping the cane, because then it was an image thing. It was what it would look like. And am I really going to walk down Ventura Boulevard, the main boulevard here, with a cane and let everybody know that I'm blind? Because technically I don't look blind, so I could play it off. But I remember I was having lunch with a friend of mine, and we were at this restaurant that had steps that went down to the outdoor patio. And when we left, I didn't know how to be blind. He didn't know how to help me being blind. And we were walking up these steps, and we were laughing, and I was probably overly laughing to cover it. And this lady came down the steps, and she goes, "Oh, nice liquid lunch." And I laughed, and then I came home and I cried, because I thought, that is not the person I want to be perceived as, this drunk lady who can't even walk up steps.
Was,
you know, I really thought it was funny, and I wanted it to be funny until it really hit me what it was. It was, lady, you can't even walk after your liquid lunch. So then that was kind of a little kick that I had to at least have some sort of signage like Adam to show other people that no, I'm not drunk, I'm blind. I might be both, but but this actually shows you I am definitely blind. And so then I called around, actually only to one school, to GDA, and it was family instantly. And the problem that I had that took me, it actually took me a few years before I actually signed up, since the time that I called, because of that issue was coming up that you had to learn how to use a cane and travel independently before you get a dog. And that was my stick. And I just said, you know, now I have a means to an end. I'm going to learn how to use this cane, and I'm going to get a dog. And that's what happened. I just started realizing, like with Adam, I need more in my life. I was listening to books, and it was fine, but I need to do more. I'm way too independent to make the world that I had at that moment okay. And applied at Guide Dogs of America and got approved and received Nigel and Carter and Edward and now Captain. And like I said before, it's opened doors that I never really could have thought that I would ever have the opportunities to be doing, whether it's meeting different people or doing different activities that nobody would care if I wasn't blind. They only care because I'm blind and I was okay. And they were things that made my blindness okay. And as a result of being blind, I was receiving and still many blessings as a result of, rather than what I can't do. But some of the things that I can do now are just, I'm blessed.
Yeah. What a wonderful perspective to have. And I'm sure I just want to again, thank you guys both so much for being part of this, because I can only imagine how meaningful it is to the puppy raiser population to be able to, you know, hear your stories and hear your words. So again, just thank you guys for taking the time to be here this evening.
Well, I think the main thank you goes out to everybody who's listening, because as much as you might hear it all the time that, you know, it's because of everybody listening that people like Adam and I are able to talk about this in such a positive life experience way.
Absolutely. You can't make guide dogs without puppy raisers. So I'd love to know a little bit, tell us a little bit about that moment when you're sitting in the dorm room and it's dog day, or if you're an in-home training and you know that the trainer's going to show up, you know, to your door with a dog. What are those few moments like before that trainer walks down the hallway, and that moment before you meet your current guide dog? Adam, what was that like for you?
I was pretty nervous. I think that was probably the most nervous I'd ever been in my life, you know, even compared to like going on a first date or anything, because, you know that you're going to be with this, you know, amazing dog for a long time, and you really hope he likes you, you know, and he's really giving his life to you, and you're just, you know, you're really nervous. For me, it was my first dog, so I didn't really know what to expect. I mean, they had the Juno training where they would kind of simulate what a dog may do in certain circumstances, but it's hard to truly envision like how it really feels the first time. And I was really excited because I knew it would help keep my world from growing smaller, which was my fear. I mean, I was truly scared of my world shrinking, because I was, you know, scared to go for a walk or something, you know, and getting hit by a car. And I remember when he first came, he ran up to me and licked my face, and he's like, "All right, it's going to be okay. He likes me."
Uh-huh.
And and then shortly after they go for the first walk, and with the cane, I would walk, I tried to walk with a sense of purpose, get from point A to point B, but I found with the cane, you know, you start walking slower and slower because you're, you know, running into things and like, okay, what's that? Oh, that's a fire hydrant, or what's this, you know? And, you know, you kind of bounce around a little bit like a ping pong ball as you kind of figure out where you are. And it was first time they harnessed Micah up, it was like driving a Ferrari. Like, he just launches, like, "I'm ready to go, Dad. Let's roll." And it was really powerful feeling, just like knowing that, all right, like, you know, I'm going to be able to do so many things with you that I didn't have the confidence to do before. And just really excited and nervous. And, you know, there's a lot of other things going in your head, like, well, how do you fly with the dog, you know, or, you know, if you want to go on a cruise or something, how do you relieve the dog? And there's all these things you didn't know, but you're like, let's just go for it, you know, let's, you know, make the best of this situation. And I'm really excited to have him with me. And I was just so grateful that you guys put all the time and energy into him to make him into such an amazing, you know, amazing companion.
That's awesome. And Lori, what's that experience been like for you, and how would you say it's different between, or is it different when you were waiting that first time to meet Nigel as your first guide dog versus maybe what you're feeling when you're waiting to meet your subsequent guide dogs?
They're all completely different. I remember when what we would do is they have us sit in our dorm room and they say, "We're going to bring your dog, you know, to you. So just sit on your bed with the leash in your hand." And you're like, "Oh, yeah, okay, I could do this." So I remember hearing the little, you know, the little nails on the flooring, and I was like, "Is it coming to my room? Is that my dog?" Nope, pass those in there. Okay, is that the next one? And then one of the trainers brought in Nigel, and I was like, I just freaked out. I'm like, I can't do this. And the trainer's like, well, you better. I'm like, okay. And I was just an emotional mush, not negative, just I didn't even know what I was feeling other than numb, and I was going to basically the opposite, give my life to this dog. I knew right away that this dog wasn't going to be mine, I was going to be his. And when I received Carter, who is my second guide dog, hi Melinda, that was really, really difficult. They had said, okay, you guys are going to get your dogs tomorrow. And it was a day earlier than normal because we had a really small class. And I started crying. And the trainers actually thought I was crying out of like joy and oh my gosh, when in reality, the real emotion was I was so sad and so scared because what is an alternate feeling is, wow, this really is determining that my relationship with Nigel is not over, but it's changing. And not that I wasn't open to getting a new guide dog, but it was like, ooh, this is very, very intense. And then when Carter walked into my room, it was like, what was I thinking? And it just, his goofiness took away. You know, you don't bond like immediately because there's so much hesitation because you're in so much question and will this dog be like the last dog? And then when Edward actually was an in-home, so he, after Carter retired, then Edward came to my home and he, I mean, it's okay to say, Edward kind of just wanted a part-time job. So I had Edward for a few months, and then it was like, I can't do this anymore. I can't love again. And then this little perfect match came along, Captain, and he also came to my home, and one of the trainers said, here, just take him. I'm like, what do I do with him? You know what to do with the dogs, just take them for the weekend. And it's difficult. Each time it gets more difficult because you're constantly comparing to the previous dog. And you have to remember that every dog you've had has had a starting point. They didn't end up as the seasoned dog right away. Mm-hmm. So on that note, it takes about 6 months to a year for a team to really get into the trust and get that bond going, but each bond is different, each bond is intense, each bond is wonderful, and each bond I am so happy to say that I have.
Wow. Yeah. Now, were either of you guys, did you have dogs in your lives prior to getting guide dogs? Would you consider yourself, are you dog people? Adam, are you a dog guy?
Yeah, I had, I've had dogs on and off throughout my life. It hadn't been continuous, but, yeah, I've had three dogs before Micah, just pets though, not guide dogs. Micah's my first guide dog. Okay. And, the difference is night and day. I mean, it's just the amount of attention they mind you, and they're always kind of looking out for you. We're like my pet dogs. I love them to death. I don't have them anymore, but you know, when I did, I loved them to death, but it was more about them, right? Like me, like, you know, it's very interesting how different they are. Yeah. It actually just kind of blows me away. But yeah, I've had three dogs before Micah. I mean, I've always enjoyed dogs, and Micah's by and far the best dog I've ever had, no question.
Nice. Lori, what about you? Were you a dog person prior to having guide dogs?
Yes, completely. And short story on that, how much goes into the matching process between what the trainers do as far as matching a guide dog for a client is I had an Irish setter. everybody who has an Irish Setter will know what I'm saying. I went from the not so smartest dog to brilliant. And I had an Irish Setter that it was he was a descendant of Walt Disney's dog, Big Red. And the night before I was going to be matched with my first dog, the trainer said, "Wait, we forgot. Did you ever have a dog before?" And I said, "Yeah, I had, you know," I told my Disney story, Walt Disney's dog, Big Red. Well, unbeknownst to me, that night, they had me actually matched with another dog in their mind for the next day. But because I had told them the story that my dog, Sean, was a descendant of Walt Disney's dog, Big Red, I got Nigel because they called Nigel Big Red in the kennel.
Oh, that's funny.
And it was just this weird, anything that adds to a potential, you know, the bonding being even stronger. And there wasn't much difference between the two dogs. You know, I've yet since learned because of working there, either one of them would have been a good match. But it was because I said Big Red, it like cued them into, oh my gosh, Nigel. So Sean actually played a part to what dog I was getting first.
Oh, that's fun. That's a great story. I love that. That's awesome. Now, of course, it's one thing to consider yourself, you know, a dog person. I can only imagine a totally different experience to then trust, you know, have the trust to put your life in the paws of a dog. So maybe talk us through a little bit what that's like when you're first learning how to work in partnership with a guide dog, and how do you go about really accepting and getting comfortable with this concept of this dog is there to keep you safe. Adam, what was that like for you?
That was probably one of the hardest parts for me. I'm by nature a pretty stubborn person. You know, I don't like to ask for help. I'm the type of person that's going to figure it out on my own. And to trust a dog wholly, like truly just like turn your life over, was hard initially. And I kind of caught myself because I had some residual vision, not really enough to navigate safely, but you know, you can see a doorway or this and this. And you know, there was times I catch myself trying to, you know, maybe kind of guide the guide dog, which doesn't really work. And I started realizing 9 times out of 10, you know, if I see a doorway and I'm going to it, but Micah's pulling me away, it's because something's in the doorway, you know? And, you know, he was trying to tell me that, and I had to really just let go and realize that he was seeing and hearing things that I couldn't. And, you know, as someone who grew up so visual, with my heart, you know, hard of hearing, I was such a visual person. That was kind of a fundamental thing that had to really shift in my thinking. And it kind of got to the point where I just started walking around with my eyes closed, you know, because the information I'm getting was not complete. And I realized I just had to trust him. And I started doing that. And the first thing I noticed after having Micah for a month or two is I didn't have bloody shins anymore from running into things.
Oh, wow.
And even with my cane, you know, you miss things and whatnot. And, you know, my shins always had like a bloody scab or something because, you know, I just run into stuff. And, you know, it's so really, I don't have any bruises. I don't have any, you know, bloody marks or anything. And, you know, he's doing his job. He's doing a great job. And, you know, after a few incidents, like, you know, like I talked to you earlier about in Seattle, where, you know, he gives me a hard no and if something happens, you're like, oh, wow, like he really saved my butt there. You can't help but really just turn yourself over to him and really just say, you know, please get me there safely. You know, I trust you. But that was definitely a little bit of an emotional process for me, just being kind of the stubborn person I am. But he proved himself. He showed me like, hey, I got your back. Don't worry.
Right. Wow. Do you find that now that you're able to kind of settle into that trusting relationship, is navigating through life, is it a little bit more relaxing? I would imagine it's probably exhausting trying to always be looking for what's going to get in your way and give you bloody shins.
Yeah, it's been a lot better because I do have a little bit of vision left. It's not much, but I have a little bit. And I find myself, you know, I used to be looking at the ground all the time, kind of trying to anticipate where the next thing was going to attack. and I'm sure Lori will commiserate with me on that. And I find with Micah, you know, I'm not doing that anymore. I don't feel my shoulders hunched over anymore. I'm looking up and around and at the things in my environment. And it may not, you know, obviously I don't see much, but, you know, even just having the sun on my face and stuff feels great. I really didn't have that before because I was so busy trying to put this broken puzzle together in my head of like what is around me. And now I can just let it happen and enjoy the moment. And it's been a huge difference. I honestly wish I'd gotten a guide dog 5 years earlier. I really should have. I didn't because I was stubborn, but he's really been a life changer in how I experience life.
Oh, that's fantastic. Lori, what was the experience like for you to learn how to completely trust that your dog was going to keep you safe?
It's usually the more residual vision you have, the harder it is, because it's back when I received Nigel, I had a lot more residual vision, and it can get you into trouble. Like Adam was saying, I remember walking with him and one of the trainers was behind me and I'm like, oh boy, we're going into a pole. I'm going into a pole. And the trainer, the famous line is, trust your dog. And I'm like, okay, I'm going to trust my dog's going to walk me right into the pole. And it was a shadow of a pole. So the pole was not in front of us. It was off to the side, but the lineup of the shadow was, I thought, for sure. And I realized that the more of those moments that we experience, the more that we think, I didn't even know that was there. Like oftentimes people will say, has he saved your life or has this one saved your life? And I'm like, I don't even know, because half the time I don't know what's there that he might have gone around or stopped for, or especially now with hybrid cars, we can't hear them. So between not seeing them and not hearing them, you, like Adam said, you've got to just throw your trust into it because you don't have another choice. The alternative is to go back home and stay inside and not take this on. But it's difficult because sometimes you're thinking, you know, there's still a dog, but they're not just a dog. They are these incredibly trained, furry humans that I trust more than I do some people, because this is their job. This is what they've chosen to do, is to look after their partner, and they're trusting their role much more than we're trusting their role. We have to catch up with them because they're, I got this, come on, let's go. Mm-hmm. And I remember the first time with each of my dogs, once, you know, it would just be a straightforward get to the curb, and I would like happily freak out, like, oh my God, look what he did. He went to the curb. And I remember, again, one of the trainers saying, Lori, good boy would be fine. I'm like, but look what he did. And, well, that's what they're supposed to do. So as much as you know that's their job, you never take it for granted as, oh, yeah, well, that's what he does. It's just every moment that they do those things that you actually know about are just smile-making and security making and confidence building. And the more of those that you experience, the more you feel all of those great things.
Wow. That's fantastic. So shifting gears just a little bit and sort of dipping our toe into the issue of service dog etiquette. I mean, I would venture to say it's a safe bet that everyone in the audience as part of the GDA community certainly understands the importance of not interrupting, distracting, interfering with a working guide dog or service dog. Can you tell us a little bit about what the experience is like for you, what you go through when you're out and you realize that somebody is trying to distract your service dog? Is it, you know, are you fearful for your safety? Are you frustrated if maybe the dog is distracted or embarrassed, or tell us a little bit about what the experience is like on your end to help kind of cement the importance of everyone practicing good service dog etiquette. Adam, if you want to jump in with that.
Yeah, I'm thinking here. Let's let Lori go first. I have a few situations I want to think through real quick.
Okay.
Well, I think a lot of it has to do with, our experiences have to do with how we handle ourselves, or how apparently, because I don't look blind, oftentimes people will question if I'm the one with a legitimate service dog. And I know that I have, I don't have to prove anything. I mean, but the problem when there is a not legitimate, or what we might want to call an Amazon service dog, either approaches
Amazon service dog because somebody has a mail order service dog vest.
Yes, because you can order the ID card and the jacket on Amazon. So there are some people that are very proud of that. Like, oh, I have a service dog, but really, she's not really a service dog. It depends what mood I'm in. I will either say, okay, this is not a conversation you want to have with me, but feel free to go on. Or I will say, I can't participate in this conversation because you need to know how wrong it is for the legitimate to be that way with legitimate service dogs that have gone through so much training, so that they aren't barking at other dogs in action, or they're not distracting a legitimate working dog. There's a big, I feel like it's kind of an entitlement thing that people who have these fake service dogs, that they're entitled to it because they have a dog and they want their dog with them. Where on the other hand, I compare it to, these guide dogs have been through 2 years of training and had to pass different tests, and you can't even think that that dog is on the same level, on the same, master's degree as our dogs. But it's a lot of it's educating people and just taking the time to say, listen, I understand this is what you have, this is what you're doing, but it could be a huge detriment to not only my life, but my dog's life as well. If you don't care about me, I'm sure you care about the dog. And it's a problem because now businesses are not asking for any questions about the dogs because they don't want to get into the middle of a lawsuit because somebody is saying that their dog is a service dog when it's not. But it's not too much. It's scary when it's happening and we are crossing a street. I trust my dogs that they have been trained well enough that if they are a little distracted, I also know the signs of what they're showing. Walking a little fast, or, your head's turning a little bit. So I can prepare if need be. But it's when you don't expect it, and it's trying to ask people, please, can you please pull your dog away from mine? And usually their response is, they're just saying hi, and just saying, I'm really sorry, he's working right now, and he can't socialize. And some people will understand, and some people will think that it's mean. But the main thing I need to think about at that moment is our safety.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a lot of it out there.
Yeah. Adam, what has some of your experience been in that regard?
There's kind of a touchy topic. Up in Washington, there's definitely a lot of fake service dogs up here, unfortunately. To Lori's point, safety first, always. If I feel that the situation is unsafe, I will try to separate myself from the situation immediately. Just, Micah does great. He's usually pretty good. He usually watches the dog, just to make sure he understands the situation, but he usually stays on task, which is good. I've had people run up to me in the grocery store with their dog. Like, it's so good to see another person with a service dog. And, their dog's trying to sniff his butt or something. And I'm like, he's working right now. I really need to give him some space so he can correctly operate in this area. Have a nice day. I try to be somewhat direct, but polite. If it's somebody who's just interested, they come up without their dog or something, I use that as an opportunity to try and be positive and, explain how he helps me and the things he does and all that. Because ultimately the public is donating their money and time to the cause, either directly or indirectly. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the more positive we can get our message to be out there, the better off everybody will be. But yeah, I definitely had one or two scenarios where I had to get pretty firm with somebody, like, look, you need to back off. Like, I'm not comfortable. You're creating a situation that's not safe. You need to back off. And usually other people in the area, if you're like a grocery store or something like that, they'll help if needed, if somebody's being really pushy or something. Mm-hmm. I've had people step in and say, hey, you know, he said you need to remove yourself. Yeah, it's kind of a tricky one. Like Lori said, you know, restaurants and stuff, you know, they're hesitant, they're intimidated to inform people that they can't have their pets in the facility because they don't really know where the rules are, or they're afraid of being sued or something. So it definitely creates sticky situations sometimes. But, you know, just try and stay positive and, you know, remove yourself from the situation as quickly as possible. And we can't change everybody. We just got to make the best of every situation.
Sure. Lori, is there something in particular that you wish people who were cited knew or were maybe more mindful of when it comes to interacting with people who are blind and visually impaired?
I would say, kind of speaking for the whole group of people that are differently abled, we're all the same. You know, there's disabilities that you can see, there's disabilities that you can't, and we all have them, whether we want to admit it or not. We've all got a something or some things that make us different than the next person. And I think awareness has gotten so much better about just, you know, the old kids, we are people too. That there is diversity on the planet, and this is just another diversity. It's not anything to be afraid of someone who's blind or be afraid to speak with someone who is different. And it just falls into that bowl of this melting pot that we're all in together. And, you know, I don't expect everybody, when I ask where something is, you know, they should know not to say it's over there. I mean, it's funny. I live for these funny comments, and it's okay if they do, but it's more to not treat it as so different. It's just somebody asking for directions in a different way, or somebody not walking exactly how somebody else might walk. I mean, obviously with the dogs, it's a smooth flow, but just respect the space of a guide dog team and respect the relationship of the guide dog team. But that takes education, and it takes educating everyone. And the more all of the guide dog teams are out there, the more people that get educated. But I think it's just, it's acceptance, and it's not so many people like, oh my gosh, I forget you're blind. I'm like, good. That's a good thing. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not a bad thing. It's a good thing. If we take it in stride, then people with different abilities or different lack of abilities, they take theirs in stride as well. So it's nothing to back off from.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And Adam, if someone's out and maybe they see you out there with Micah and they want to initiate a conversation, but they're savvy enough to realize that Micah's a guide dog and that you probably can't see the person, what's the best way for that person to maybe get your attention and offer a casual hello? Maybe you're waiting at a bus stop together.
Yeah, I would say just talk to me like a normal person. You know, hey, how are you doing today? You know, where are you headed? Or, you know, just, you know, as Lori said, everybody's got their challenges. Some are seen, some are unseen. And I would just say, treat me just like anyone else. I think the biggest thing is, you know, unwanted attention, unwanted help, stuff like that. You know, if you see me and I'm having trouble or something, wait for me to ask for help or something and not just jump in. Cause you know, maybe I'm just doing something differently than you're used to doing it because, you know, that's what I'm able to do, but, you know, it works for me. So I would say just treat me normally. Don't treat me any differently. And, you know, don't be so quick to make assumptions. Oftentimes somebody with any challenge, whatever it may be, might do things differently because that's what works for them. And, yeah.
Excellent. And I definitely want to leave time for some Q&A from the audience. So my last question will be to whichever one of you wants to jump in with an answer, but what is the funniest thing that you're comfortable sharing that a sighted person has ever said to you?
Do you have 2 hours?
I'm sure, Laura, you have a list.
I live for them. I look for them. I set people up for them.
Okay, we can squeeze in. Let's hear from both of you on this if you would like to share.
Adam, go ahead.
I'm just trying to think here. I think the funniest one I had was I had a new employee, and they said, my boss is blind. And I was like, yep, get used to it. And I guess they just couldn't fathom that someone blind could possibly be their boss, you know. And we had a great relationship after that. But they just, when they first met me, they're like, whoa, that was unexpected.
Okay, yep. Lori, how about you?
Those of you guys who know me, I have so many, but I would say probably I've got two top ones. I asked somebody where the restroom was, and we got the over there. It's fine. Get it. Break it down a little bit more. It's to the door on your right. Is there one door or two doors? There's two doors. And then the guy paused and said, how do you teach them how to read? And I paused and I was like, my dog, just to make sure. And he said, yeah, how do you teach them how to read, like men or women? And I said, I just looked at him straight. I think I was looking at him straight. And I said, he's hooked on phonics. And because you can't do anything with comments like that, you just got to go with it and give it your best shot at being as funny as you think you can be. And the other one was when I was at work one day and a woman was thinking about coming in for a tour with her Girl Scout troop. And at the end, I said, yeah, you should come in, bring in the kids. They can meet my guide dog. And the lady, all of a sudden, quiet. And I wanted her to be comfortable. I mean, I've accepted it. It's fine. And I'm like, but my life is really full and I'm good. And, you know, we're fine. And she goes, no, that's not it. And I said, what? And she goes, you don't sound blind. So I said to her was, well, actually my blindness affected my eyes, but my vocal cords were spared. So it's just, I love that. I love those things and they happen all the time. And it definitely adds humor to a world that you wouldn't think has so much humor in it.
Right. That's awesome. Yeah. It looks like we're getting,
go ahead. I've got the reading one before too, Lori.
Did you?
Yeah, somebody asked me. I forget what the situation was. I just laughed. I was like,
wow.
We figure it out. It's like Finding Dory. You just bump around, you figure it out.
Right.
That's awesome. Looks like we've got quite a bit of chatter going on. People wondering if Micah likes to kayak. Does Micah accompany you on your kayak adventures, Adam?
So I haven't actually tried that before. I want to, but last year in May, I got Micah, and so we were just getting into spring and summer, and I wanted to get a little more comfortable and get to know him a little bit better before I took him out on a boat.
Got it.
So I think this year I plan to. I just I definitely need to make sure someone's around me in case he tries to go for a swim.
Right.
Yeah. And he loves water, like in the backyard and stuff. You know, if I'm watering flowers or something, I mean, he first one trying to mouth at the nozzle and stuff. So he loves water. I'm not worried about that. But yeah, for the first time, I definitely want to make sure there's a few people around.
Nice. Well, we certainly look forward to some fun kayaking pictures. If you guys decide
definitely.
That's a good adventure for the two of you together. Well, gosh, I could sit and talk to you guys all night, but it seems unfair of me to hog all of the question time. So I am going to step back from my interviewer role and ask Carol Ann to kind of chime in and maybe run us through some of the questions that our audience has been typing into the Q&A.
Yes.
What you got there, Carol Ann?
Hi, guys. So I think there was quite a few questions just talking about how everyone on the call, all of the raisers, can sort of what could you tell us as advice to do with the puppies that we're raising that might make life easier for you in the long run? I know it's hard to know what we actually do with the puppies, but I don't know.
Do everything the puppy department tells you to do.
Oh, well, we did that? Not pay Lori for that.
Yes.
I have one big thing that I've always said is just like so important, I know for myself, is recall. Because if I had to pick between any command, which one would be the most important would be to know that my dog will come when I call him. Now, that doesn't mean I don't care if he sits or stays or lays down. All those are important, but recall is the scariest thing that you have to depend on. When your dog happens to run and you think the area is hermetically sealed, but I mean, it happened once and I freaked out and I knew from that point on, everything was fine, but I knew from that point on the recall as far as the team, I mean, obviously saving you from danger is huge, but to work on recall is ginormous, at least for me.
Great advice. Adam?
I'd agree. So I have two. I had one until Lori said recall. That's a really good point. I agree with that 100%. Make sure, you know, the dog's excited to come to you, the positive experience, and that they, you know, want to do that. You know, case in point, my first day out of GDA, I graduated, had my dog, I'm in the world, awesome. And it was a really long day for me. We flew home, we got stuck in, I think it was San Francisco's airport for like 5 hours. I mean, I didn't get home until like 4 a.m. Oh, I'm exhausted, I'm not thinking clearly. Yeah. And I'm like, okay, I'm in my driveway. Like, all right, it's time to let him go potty. He's been a good boy. And I mistakenly unhooked him from the leash altogether. I didn't, you know, detach the part that makes it longer. And he went, you know, run into a nearby bush or something. And I'm like, oh no, oh God, no. I said, no, come here. And he came right over. And I mean, we're human. Mistakes happen.
Right.
You know, especially if we're tired or in a situation that might be challenging. So that's a good one, Lori. And then the other thing I would say is just expose the dogs to as much things as possible. All of our lives are different. I mean, you never know what we're going to throw at them. We don't even know what we're going to throw at them. You know, I've had Micah to baseball games. I've had him to the beach. I've had him inside. So I work in a machine shop. So, you know, machinery, forklifts running around. You know, I take him to Home Depot. Like, just anything you can possibly imagine, this dog's been through. So the more experiences they have that are unique and challenging, the better. They'll just be that much more prepared for what we are going to encounter in our day-to-day lives.
Yeah, that's great. That answers that question like to a T. Great. And then do you ever feel or kind of get the feeling that the either Captain or Micah, do they ever get tired or like they ever need a vacation from working?
I know with Captain, because he's going to be four, he's young, and he's definitely has an on and an off button. I mean, if we go, 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 he'll go, go, go. If I'm not in a go, go, go day, he's pretty good at chilling, which is good for my world. I think as they age, we can tell, or I should say I've been able to tell, okay, you know, we're not, keep in mind, I'm not working my dogs like in New York and it's go, go, go and crossing streets and horns honking. And the lifestyle that I have, I can say, is pretty consistently not crazy. But no, I don't think I had the lifestyle that would have any of the dogs shown that they were tired until they got older.
How about you, Adam?
So mentally, Micah does not really get tired. He does really good keeping up with me. And I do put him through a lot. Like when I'm working and stuff, I mean, I might work an 11 or 12 hour day. I'm on the factory floor, forklifts going around and meetings, you know, I might visit a supplier, you know, getting in and out of Ubers. I mean, he goes through a lot. And he just wants to be with me. He just follows and, you know, he wants to, you know, he's very excited to see the next new thing. And maybe it's because he's a little bit of a puppy still. But, you know, every time I'm getting up, he's excited. He wants to, where are we going next? You know, I want to see. And he won't notice it until you're home that night and he's just passed out on his bed. Like, yeah, that was a busy day, wasn't it, buddy? Or, you know, sometimes in a meeting, he always sleeps on my feet to make sure that if I move, he's ready to go. And I remember there was one meeting that was particularly long, and it was with the president of the company. And next thing you hear, you just hear this big sigh from underneath the table. And it's Micah, and everyone just stops and looks. I'm like, yeah, that might be our cue. We're running a little long here today, guys.
Funny. So, that's so great to know that they're like, have such a great work ethic, it sounds like. Awesome.
And also, cool. I know.
Yeah, they're just excited to see the world. Someone,
yeah.
It's part of the match. Like, if you had a go, 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 part of the matching that the trainers do is to give you a dog that's looking and needing that kind of activity. So that plays a big role in it, too.
Absolutely.
Awesome. Is there any... I think we probably thought we'd cut it off. I don't know what time it is. I haven't even been looking.
It's about 7:30, so we want to be mindful of how long we're keeping everybody gathered here. I know that it doesn't look like we're going to make it through all of the questions that were submitted, and we're sorry if we didn't get to your question yet. We can always try to do a little bit of follow-up maybe with Adam and Lori and share a little bit more information later. I love being able to have the opportunity to do this. So I think all of you out there in the audience, you can expect to see more of these coming, you know, in the weeks to come. Adam and Lori, once again, thank you guys both so much for being here this evening and sharing some of your story with us. We're just so thrilled to hear that you guys are out and doing well. And I'm pretty sure both of your puppy raisers were tuned in this evening. So
yeah,
what an extra special treat for them to be able to get such a detailed update on how you guys are doing.
Yeah, there's so much feedback here, guys. It's like they're awesome. Their stories are so inspirational, and their senses of humor. And thanks for the lesson in courage. I mean, we'll have to like type up all the great positive feedback that everyone is sending to the two of you, because it's pretty awe-inspiring just how wonderful everybody's feeling getting your guys' perspective. And it's just definitely, I think, in making everybody feel like this is why they're part of GDA.
I would say, you know, the thanks is really coming from us. You know, thank you guys so much for putting all the time and energy in. I know it's a tremendous amount of work. It's more than just taking a dog out in public and wearing a yellow jacket. It's so much more than that. And I know that not all the dogs make it. And that's really hard, you know, knowing that you put so much work into something, hoping it would benefit someone. And I really just can't tell you guys how much I appreciate everything you do.
I think somebody said the best comment I think I saw, or one of the best ones, was saying how they can hear how the love in your guys' voice that you have for your dogs.
I just got a chill.
I know, isn't it? It was just like, and it's true. You can just hear how much of a bond and how much you love your dog. And that is awesome.
Absolutely.
Well, and I want everyone to know that not everybody can be open enough to share it, but we all think like this and feel like this with our dogs. And I hope that everybody, I mean, you know, these dogs have changed our lives, and I hope by what you guys are doing changes your life at least like one percentage of the amount that it changes ours.
Awesome. All right. Well, I think with that, I think that probably concludes our all area meeting for the month of April. I'm going to bring us back here Brady Bunch style so we can sign out. But thank you all for being here. Please reach out if there's anything, you know, we can do for you guys as our puppy raiser at large and breeder hosts and people between puppies and just part of the GDA family in general. If there's anything we can be doing to help you guys out right now, let us know. Otherwise, once again, thank you all for being here. A final thank you to Adam and Lori. And we're going to sign off and say everyone have a wonderful evening.
Stay well.
Yes. Stay safe. Be
thank
well.
Thank you.
Bye, everyone.
All right, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Take care, everybody.
Bye-bye.
All right. Great.